This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Spoilers!
This is Geeks out on Joy 94.9.
Oh, brilliant.
This is the show where all pop worlds collide, from comics, horror, sci-fi, and other stuff we decide to talk about because we can.
Just whatever's good.
Yeah, it's just whatever we feel like. That voice, of course, is Miranda Sparks.
Hi.
And across the other side, we have Tamsin, who's pressing buttons for the first time.
I'm paneling. They're trusting me.
She's so delightfully nervous, but you're going to rock it. We absolutely know you will.
Yes.
And it's doing. Well, she's doing great because buttons are already actually flying off the panel, literally. So if you like to donate to Joy, you can head to our website to give us a donation or become a member to sponsor us getting a new panel.
Now, what do we have tonight?
Sorry, I got distracted. So we are going to take a look back on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and its immense cultural impact. Author Miranda Sparks, never heard of her, joins us in the studio to talk about the heroic vampires of Fang Force. Clayton, that's me, reviews ABC... No.
Apple TVs.
Apple TVs. Latest servant. We're doing great tonight. Before giving us the take on stage production Photograph 51. I think I'm talking about mice in the third person. But first.
There we go. And now,
Geek News.
With Kids News Anchor.
Whoever.
And Miranda is our news lady for this evening.
I'm really excited for this first piece because in news that rocks our collective worlds, actor Billy Dee Williams, most famously known for playing Lando Calrissian in Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, has, at 82 years old, come out as gender fluid. Quote from the actor, "I say himself and herself because I see myself as feminine and masculine," the actor told Esquire. "I'm a very soft person. I'm not afraid to show that side of myself." She continued, "I never tried to be anything except myself. I think of myself as a relatively colorful character who doesn't take himself or herself too seriously." I love this. So, like, it just goes to show that, you know, it's never too late to, you know, come out and, you know, be your full self.
And definitely not 82, and I think they are currently starring in The Mandalorian, is that correct?
I think they are, yes.
Yeah, side guest points.
Okay, nice. That's, yeah.
I think, you know, she does have a couple of little cameos as well.
We're just throwing out all the pronouns at this point.
I mean, I think that's exactly how Billy would like it as well.
Yeah,
so exactly. I'm just going to mix it up, you know, he gets to indulge in all the pronouns, the lucky bitch. I got to say as well, I floated this a lot, this story to a couple of my gender fluid, gender neutral friends. When they heard it, they were like, "Oh my gosh, Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian, we have someone so cool on our team." Like, we already have, they already have cool people on their team, but now that they have Billy Dee Williams as well, that's something really to write home about. So congrats to all the gender fluid people out there who have a really awesome representative joining your club.
One of us.
One of us. Gooboo gobble. But I'm really happy about this.
Definitely.
We do have some less happy news right now. Although I do, you know, I do want to say that there's a bit of celebration in this too.
Absolutely. I think there is, but.
So Supergirl star Melissa Benoist offered a heartfelt message on Instagram this past week, sharing her own history with intimate partner violence. She's quoted as saying, "The long and winding road of healing and reconciliation has brought me to this moment where I feel strong enough to talk about my experience openly, honestly, and without shame. She went on to say that by sharing my story, hopefully I can empower others to seek help and extricate themselves from abusive relationships. Everyone deserves to be loved, void of violence, fear, and physical harm. She also shared screenshots of additional messages stating, I am just one of so many that have the experience of intimate partner violence. One in four women are affected by it. She did emphasize that men are definitely affected by it as well, but that it predominantly and largely affects women most of all. I also want to quickly say that if folks are distressed by the subject, you should definitely contact Lifeline. Their number is 13 11 14. There's also QLife, who you can check out, who you can call 1-800-184-527, and also Beyond Blue 1-300-224-636. If you or someone you know is experiencing intimate partner violence, they definitely have the resources to point you in the right direction. But I want to say, you know, even though, because she listens to this show every week, Melissa, thank you so much for being an incredible bold voice, speaking up about your experience and hopefully emboldening others. This is, it's always such a shock to hear that, you know, someone who, you know, has a pedestal and is famous and is, you know, like, you know, looks so squeaky clean and is Supergirl can suffer something like this. And it just goes to show it's something that affects everybody and that everybody can potentially climb out of it as well.
Absolutely. And if you want to do a Google, there's actually some also some dedicated phone lines for family violence that you can access as well. I think 1-800-RESPECT is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the other one, but have a bit of a Google and you'll be able to find those.
I mean, definitely. There is resources and help out there. Going into, you know, crossing over the superhero aisle from the DC universe into Marvel, details are sparse when it comes to the collection of Marvel series spinning out of the Avengers franchise for Disney Plus, but sources have rumored that a major Doctor Strange villain will be joining the cast of WandaVision. The immensely powerful Nightmare is a demon that rules the dream dimension and gets power by tapping into the psychic energies of unconscious people. So, I know that definitely seems like it's the kind of thing that's going to affect WandaVision a lot, seeing as, well, it's not a spoiler anymore that, you know, the Vision kind of bought it at the end of Infinity War. And now we've got this whole multiverse adventure happening where we might see him coming back in one shape or another. WandaVision will serve as a continuation of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, the Doctor Strange sequel that's going to be coming out next year, I think.
Not sure off the top of my head.
I think next year. And it will star Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet Witch, Paul Bettany as Vision, Randall Park as Agent Jimmy Woo. I'm very excited about that one. As well as Kat Dennings as Darcy Lewis and Tonoya Paris as Monica Rambeau. Also, Catherine Hahn will be joining the cast in an undisclosed role. The limited series will premiere on Disney Plus in spring 2021. They've really got it planned out, Marvel.
That's a long way away. I'm not happy about that.
I mean... right now, like, you know, we're waiting until 2021 for a lot of Marvel things. I think we only really get the Eternals happening next.
I need to look at a list. We need JJ.
This is what JJ is for. JJ is better at dates than I am.
He is. He has a lot of dates.
I think he'd be excited to hear that, actually.
Yeah, so I think that we need to sort of have a, like, place to go and just go, but I need all this now. Like a support group is what I'm looking for.
See, I kind of think, you know, it's a bit of a good thing because, you know, we have had a slew of Marvel content happening over the last 10 years and, you know, people maybe could use a little bit of a break. I think, you know, the term franchise fatigue has been bandied around a bit lately and I think Marvel are actually receptive to it and, you know, they're like, yeah, we need to put on the brakes a little bit.
Did we talk last week about the She-Hulk's showrunner?
We did not, actually.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to look up her name. But she is one of the writers for Rick and Morty, and she wrote Pickle Rick and won an Emmy for that.
Oh, God.
So,
A couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. We did talk about it? Okay, cool.
But only in news. So,
right, yeah. So,
amazing.
So this is the kind of comedy we're going to be getting from She-Hulk?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm
quite cool for that, yeah.
Now, speaking of TV comedy, while not confirmed, composer for The Simpsons, Danny Elfman, let loose whispers of the show's potential conclusion. quote, "From what I've heard, it's coming to an end," he told the folks over at Joe before adding, "I don't know for a fact, but I've heard that we'll be in its last year." He continues, "All that I can say is that I'm flabbergasted that it lasted as long as it did. You have to realize, when I scored The Simpsons, I wrote this crazy piece of music and I expected no one would hear it because I really did not think the show had a chance in hell. Really, I expected it would run for 3 episodes and get cancelled and that would be that. Because it was so weird at the time, I just didn't think it had a chance." The Simpsons is currently in its 30th year since it went to air on 1989.
Wow.
There have been people who've experienced entire lifetimes who've been born and not lived in a world without The Simpsons.
Who's been born, had children, and their children have... No, that's not possible.
I mean, that's... It's too wild to think about.
It is. I'm wearing a Simpsons t-shirt right now, so it wasn't intentional.
Now, for folks who can't see, and which is all of you, Clayton is wearing a Mr. Sparkle shirt, which is the, if you remember, the Simpsons episode where Homer found his own visage on a Japanese washing...
Cleaning product.
Yeah. Packet.
Which was a weird amalgamation of a couple of different things. I showed this to my Japanese partner, and he was just like, it doesn't make sense.
But it is a wild thing that, you know, this phenom, like, now we're kind of, there. I myself have been like, The Simpsons has kind of, you know, they jumped the shark after Armin Tanzarian and, you know, should have ended a while ago. But so much of it is in the social schema now that there's an entire generation of people who can just have a conversation in Simpsons quotes.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure JJ does half the time whenever he's in.
I probably stopped watching about 15 years ago, other than catching a few episodes here and there. Mm-hmm. And I don't really miss it, but now that it's available on streaming, I may actually watch more again.
I was going to say, I've started watching season 29 because it's now available on streaming. And I realised I probably stopped around 23. But
okay. You did better than me then.
Now, do we have time for one more? Do we want to get right into our Buffy retrospective?
I'm going to leave it up to you.
There's a lot of Buffy. I think we should actually, you know, wrap it up there and then we'll... We're going to bring in some Buffy, and I know, Tamsin, you're very excited. Tamsin, by the way, has been working all afternoon, you know, pulling together all her favorite Buffy episodes. And
I purposely watched one episode from every season yesterday, so I'd be prepped for this.
You are a machine, my gosh.
Had to do it. Thank God it was raining.
Well, folks, you're listening to Geeks Out. We'll be right back to talk Buffy.
In every generation, there is a chosen one. She alone will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. She is the Slayer.
There is that amazing theme tune that we knew and loved for 7 long seasons of Buffy. Not long enough, actually.
Oh, my God. This is my high school years flying back at me.
I wish it was my high school years. So, no, it was my later high school years, but very later. I loved Buffy so much that it was probably the first series I ever obtained through not great means.
Oh, I had 50 discs of all the Buffy seasons.
Now, was this during the Napster era?
Pretty close to that, yeah. Actually, no, that would have been that era.
So, yeah. Napster.
Yeah. But now I've got it all on disc, plus I have it on a paid streaming service, and now it has just become available on Stan for the first time. Available on a free, or not free, but a... communal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's called it.
I just want all the younger listeners out there to know Napster is not about elderly diapers or anything like that. it's what us old folks had in place of torrents in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Until Metallica lost their minds and then you read up about it, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. And of course we'd never do anything like that now, that's very wrong.
Never. So, and I was kind of shocked when JJ, and I think this is what triggered it immensely, had never ever seen an episode. And I was like, how young is he? And of course, it was actually on more than 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So quite adult towards, you know, was 7 when it finished.
Now, there was a time when Buffy was on a popular cable service before we had all the streaming providers, when they would essentially show it, I think, every afternoon at 4:30 or so, and then on a Saturday morning, they would just, you know, hit you with a whole block of them. So that's kind of where I watched the majority of Buffy. My first episode was Once More with Feeling, the musical episode.
And what an odd place to start.
Well, it was a very odd place to start. It was just because I, you know, like I'd heard everyone in school kind of talking about Buffy, and I was one of those jerk kids who thought I was better than what was popular. And then eventually I watched this really silly musical episode, and I'm like, dang, I actually like this.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought it was a goth girl's, rock goth girl's, like, dream.
I mean, you'd think so, but, you know, I was, you know, I was, like, you know, so levels above everyone that I was just like, no, I'm only listening to my noise bands and, you know.
I was the omnibus kid, so that's what they called the weekend runs when you couldn't binge watch.
Yes.
You watched an omnibus on the weekend, and that's, yeah, I must admit that was my catching up of Buffy, and I must admit my favourite episode was definitely the one, Miranda, that you came in on, Once More With Feeling.
Once More With Feeling, yeah.
And so for those who don't, I'm just going to read the what Buffy actually is. So Buffy Summers, she tries to live a normal high school life while embracing her responsibilities and destiny as a vampire, a hunter of vampires and demons.
Yes.
And that's 7 seasons.
She finds out that she's this thing called a slayer, which is a vampire hunter, you know, who's, you know, almost spiritually chosen. And it's run for many, many, many generations, and now she's just the latest in a long, long line.
And just to be clear, she actually never finds out in the series that she's a vampire slayer. It's actually in the movie that was created before that, which is actually in the same continuity, where she actually finds out she's a slayer. So in the first season, she comes full knowing that she's the slayer.
Wow. Mm. Wait, so does that mean that the movie is actually TV canon?
Yes.
Yes.
It works into the same continuity.
But with a different Buffy and...
Different Buffy, different everybody.
That means like Luke Perry is, you know, Buffy canon, and I'm very happy about that.
Who played Pike.
And Paul Rubens as well.
Oh, I forgot about that, actually.
They were in the film as well, so, yeah.
You have a bit more info for us?
Yeah. So it premiered in 1997, as we were speaking earlier, and then concluded in 2003. So quite capably, you know, someone who's 15, 16, never had a chance. And even older, because you're not watching TV when you're junior. So I highly recommend going back and starting. I don't think it's age.
See, I don't know. If it was my four-year-old, I'd be seeing the man and be like, right, we got some Buffy for you.
To point out, I was 20 when the series started. Yeah, so I, you know, I'm just...
Showing your age there, Clint.
And I still loved it anyway.
I was 21. Sure.
Well, okay, sure.
Am I the only one who was an actual teen and the appropriate age when this first came out?
Yeah, you're the only person on the planet who ever actually watched it as a teen.
I mean, in this room.
Okay.
Tell us a bit more about Buffy, Tim.
Okay, so poor Buffy wants to live a normal life. She learns and embraces her destiny, but she's also aided by the Watcher. Now, Giles...
Played by Anthony Stewart Head.
Yes, is fabulous. And love that he stayed through the whole seasons to go us there. So, and he trains her, and then unlike her predecessors, who were one band armies and that was it, Buffy actually surrounds herself with her loyal friends.
I love that they have a name as well. Like, what do they call themselves?
The Scooby Gang. How can you not? They are fabulous.
The only thing they missed out on was having an actual Scooby-Doo crossover episode like they did with, like Supernatural did with Scooby-Doo.
I did love that. Supernatural, can we do another one of that?
Well, possibly, yes. But actually, well, of course, Sarah Michelle Gellar went on to play Velma in Scooby-Doo.
She did. So that's another eerie connection right there.
That's exactly it. So who was your favourite sidekick out of...
That's a hard choice.
For a long time, I was a Willow girl. But then Willow, you know, kind of turned into a bit of a jerk toward the end.
So, you know, fair enough.
Yeah. So I would say, like, Anya then became my favorite.
Anya? We do like Anya. She started off as a bitch and went to being nice.
Well, that's the great thing about, like, you know, character arcs is that, you know, like, your favorites can change and that... I don't think Willow really could have gone anywhere I would have liked, you know, because I really did enjoy her as the shy, overalls kind of wearing, sort of mousy high school girl. And, you know, once she became an adult, like, and she was inevitably going to change, but I'm like, nope. Just, you're being a jerk to your girlfriend. I'm not into this.
And, yeah, there's definitely a major issue, but then we get to season 7 where she makes serious amends. So I think she redeemed herself so much. And I also think that that was probably the only interesting thing about season 6 was the Willow storyline.
The Willow goes... Anyway, watch it. It's a really interesting story.
We're going to share some thoughts about season 6, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so Xander, are we...
He was fine. He's got a bit problematic in the more recent days. Not Xander himself, but the actor, Nicholas Brennan.
Brennan.
I got it right first time.
Yep.
And I think he was he was perfect for that role, but he never was a favourite for me.
I think he aged quite, like, everyone else seemed to keep that young, eventful, and he aged quite dramatically towards the end, which was always there's better ways to do it.
I never really liked him as a character. He just seemed like the loser boyfriend hanger-on type who never really found his place among the cast. And it's just like, you're surrounded by much better people than you, and somehow you're still here.
To the point, there's even an episode about that.
Yeah.
The Zephyr, I think it's called.
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, they were self-conscious about it, but that's still, you know, I never really took a liking to him personally.
No, not really. I love Anya. I have to say, I think it was probably one of my favorites. Well, I really liked Oz as well.
I loved Oz.
Seth Green's amazing. So.
He was fabulous. All right, so shall we do favorite couples? And then...
let's do favorite couples. I'm actually going to be really controversial, and I'm going to say Oz and Willow are my favorite.
Oh, okay, fair.
Everyone says Willow and Tanya, and I hate to break trend because, you know, like, yeah, I know they're a hit shipping.
Tara,
but Willow and Oz were just an extraordinarily cute couple, and... I don't know, I didn't totally buy Willow Tara. Like, it just didn't feel true to me in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people related to it differently, but as far as my own personal experience goes, I didn't feel it so much.
I must admit that when we play our out song tonight, which comes from Once More with Feelings, and it's the Tara singing to Willow, it's definitely how I saw the relationship. Willow was, she was there, but she wasn't there. Tara put all the effort in.
I personally think, Tara deserved a lot better than Willow. But
I don't think it's the song we're playing.
we'll check that later.
We'll check that later.
There is a fantastic song.
Anyway, who's your favourite pairing?
Look, I'm not sure I really got into any of the couples in particular. Like, I think I did also really love Oz and Willow, but it's, you know, and I feel like Tara and Willow because it was one of my first queer sort of TV exposures, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, Buffy and Spike.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Please.
I was just going to be like, I'm going to have to leave now.
Yeah, no, not at all. That was the worst thing they ever did.
Tam, your number one couple.
My number one couple, I have to be traditional and go Buffy and Angel. I was such a sucker.
It is the classic romance.
It is.
Yes.
Mm. So, last but not least, favorite episode. And then we'll...
Oh, Clayton, you start.
I have two, and I can't decide between the two, so I'm going to go with Hush, which was a really interesting episode because there is over half the episode without dialogue and just them not be able to talk, and I thought that was absolutely incredible. But then there's The Body, which is the episode in which Buffy's mother dies, and just the grief and the rawness and the fact they didn't use music throughout the episode, and it was just very clever, and I think it was an amazing episode.
Mm. Agreed. And Miranda?
Now, again, my first episode was Once More with Feeling. While that holds a special place in my heart, and I still kind of, you know, sing the songs sometimes I will rock out and be like, let me rest in peace in the shower. I'll have to go with, I'll say Band Candy, just because that was an episode in which cursed candy, which was being used to raise funds for the school band, was given to adults and that then mentally regressed them to teenagers. So we got to see, Giles acting like a young brat and definitely seeing more of the, I'd compare him to, like, you know, John Constantine from the DC universe, the way his character is sometimes, his younger self is portrayed anyway. And older Giles, we know him now, he kind of looks back at, you know, young Giles and being like, oh, John, why did you do that? Mm. Oh, no. Plus, you know, there was the, you slept with my mom moments of that episode as well.
Does she not discover that until earshot when she's actually got the telepathic ability?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's actually, she doesn't find out in that episode. It's like seasons later.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh.
Actually, no, later that season. Yeah.
Tamsin.
Yes.
Your favorite episode.
Well, as we keep repeating, and I'm going to say it again, even though it's the most corny episode, it's the one I remember the most, and it's Once More With Feeling, because who doesn't love singing vampires? It's fabulous. The whole chorus.
I love that as well, that they're all aware that they're in a musical as well, and that they've been cursed and are like, how do we suddenly land in a musical? What is this?
And it's Bunny's fault.
And it's Bunny's fault. There's a great quote from Russell T. Davies here about, you know, the cultural impact of Buffy the Vampire Slayer as well. You know, you should read that. Oh, do you want me to read that?
Go on, read it.
Okay, Russell T. Davies is quoted as saying, Buffy the Vampire Slayer showed the whole world and an entire sprawling industry that writing monsters and demons and the end of the world is not hack work. It can challenge the best. Joss Whedon raised the bar of every writer, not just in genre niche writers, but every single one of us. You can see, you know, as well in Russell T. Davies' Doctor Who, the influences of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the monster of the, like, I'm sure, you know, no, Joss Whedon didn't invent Monster of the Week.
The Big Bad either.
The Big Bad. He didn't invent the Big Bad either, but, you know, like, it definitely was one of the most iconic series to have, you know, Monster of the Week and then, you know, having an overall arcing story. Like, you know, we never had that with Batman 66, for example.
Absolutely not. But it definitely was a theme in Doctor Who for most of the seasons, so.
Yeah. So, but it's probably, it's probably the best modern example.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the diversity and inclusion is probably my big one across it. But, okay, so out of stakes, what should all the young'uns listening be going out and watching it?
How 10.
Many stakes? 10? I'm 10 as well.
I mean, I can't say 10 because I have some real problems with some of Buffy. So I'm going to say 7.
Fair. You can leave now.
Yes.
Goodbye, everybody. Meanwhile, in the Geeks Out studio, a new superhero trailer has dropped.
Blogosphere is all over it. We need to get a review out, and fast.
This looks like a job for Geeks Out.
Geeks Out!
Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
I think at some point we need to do a Buffy part 2. Possibly.
We really do. I think that's only appropriate.
Yes.
Especially with the Miranda drop the mic at the end of that.
Anyway, so, no, your score is very valid, Miranda. I want to be clear on that. I was just teasing.
I know. But either way, I'm quitting this week, everyone. Goodbye. I scored Buffy 7, and now we're going to be talking my vampires.
All right, well, you know what? We should make you a guest then. So our next guest is Miranda Sparks, author of such series as Glimmer Girl and Magna Force. Did you see my segue there? Well, that was pretty good.
I did. Although Magna Force, I should point out, isn't a series. It's just it's a supplement in a gaming book. But, you know, people should definitely check it out if they ever want to play Power Rangers.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. Currently, she has a new web series coming out called Fang Force.
Yes. Which is...
I feel like we should have had, like, applause music or something to introduce you.
We maybe should have done. Uh-huh. But I don't want to build myself up too much, seeing as, you know, I'm co-host and guest. It's so weird.
Okay, go into guest mode.
Okay, I'm into... Hi, it's lovely to be here on Geeks Ort.
Oh,
yes, I've heard of this show.
Hey, good. Have you ever listened?
A couple of times on the podcast. You'll do really well. All right. I really love Amanda Sprinkles.
So, how long have you been online publishing your work?
I have been writing web fiction for going on about 10 years now. I started writing a series called Glimmer Girl, which I have talked about on air before, on the cusp of my transition, because if you don't know, I'm trans. Gasp, shock, horror.
Oh, is that what that was?
We're all shocked by this news. But I wrote a trans superhero to, you know, reflect what I really wanted from stories at the time. And I started writing prose blog fiction. A lot of people say to me, oh, I love your comic. And I'm like, it's not a comic. it's the written word, but it's about comic book themes. So thank you anyway. But I've been I started writing Glimmer Girl 10 years ago, rebooted it a number of times. I've got a 25-issue series out on my blog, and I've decided to start this brand new series called Fang Force.
And Glimmer Girl is so much that you have her on your body.
I do have her on my body. I have her tattooed on my left bicep.
And a lovely tattoo it is.
And too. I will show her off every chance I get. She's also brandishing the trans flag.
Nice.
As well. So she's gorgeous. I love
it. We'll pop that on our Facebook page if you want to have a look if you haven't seen it already. There are people who haven't seen it, I think.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. So why Fang Force?
Fang Force, I got to admit, it started as a joke, sort of in my head. I kind of went through a bit of a Power Rangers kick for a while.
Isn't that still going?
It's still ongoing.
Okay.
I don't think it'll ever stop, really, because, sure, like, you know, I'm autistic as well, and my obsession is superheroes of all sorts. So Power Rangers is definitely a big one, and I kind of thought it to myself, it's like, they've never done a vampire-themed one. That would be fun. So I more or less just, you know, was toying with this idea for a while. And then one day I just got a burst of energy. I was like, what if I actually plotted this out? What if I actually planned it and wrote it and treated it like a real thing, like something with substance? And again, it started as a joke, and I didn't think anyone would ever take what was essentially Vampire Power Rangers seriously. I didn't think anyone would actually want to read this. But I was like, hell, I want to read this. This is goofy and silly and wonderful and possibly suspenseful and great. And I planned it out and I started writing it, and lo and behold, suddenly I have fans and people who are really getting behind it. You know, like, it may be, you know, the people who I've shown behind the scenes, because on the blog right now there's only 2 chapters that have been released, mm-hmm, out of the 46, which I've currently already written.
So that's like a year.
That's like a year's worth of content, because these chapters come out weekly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely picked up interest, which has completely surprised and amazed me, but I love that people are able to enter this world with me. And that's how Fang Force happened.
Well, that doesn't suck.
It doesn't suck. It's pretty awesome, actually.
And authors should always write what they want to read, I think. So,
I mean, that's it. That's exactly what got me. That's good English from an author. That's exactly what got me writing in the first place when I was 15 years old and I was writing fan fiction. I was like, I want this to exist in the world. And that's why anyone should write, even if you're no good at it for a while. By the way, all artists out there, let yourself suck for a while, because, you know, that's how you get good.
There's so many vampire puns.
Let yourself suck.
Are these your traditional Bram Stoker's vampires?
You know, they're actually not. Traditional vampires, you know, like night-stalking bloodsuckers, do exist in the world, in this world. But they're known as the unliving vampires. Meanwhile, there are, Fang Force Art is their living vampires. So they can walk around in the daytime. They are functionally, well, semi-immortal. They're nigh-immortal. So they age.
Translation, please.
They age very slowly, mm-hmm, but eventually they will die and become unliving vampires. But as living vampires, they can walk around. They don't like the daytime so much, but they can still survive it, okay? And they don't need to drink blood to feed. I've actually drawn from a couple of different cultural sources. So in Japan and Egyptian mythology, you'll find in some stories vampires that draw energy by inhaling breath.
Ooh.
So there's all these great comedic elements in the story as well, of vampires that, you know, have this near kiss experience with each other, which is funny because the majority of the cast here are boys as well. There's only one female character on the cast, and she is the Red Ranger. She's the leader, and she's surrounded by this virtual harem of handsome vampire men who at some point come up and they're like, can I inhale your breath, darling?
I want to suck your breath.
But, you know, that was such an important thing to me as well, just getting into, you know, the roles of the characters that, I mean, a lot of people draw on the metric of the the Bechdel test of being a female positive story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I don't have many women in Fang Force, the fact that it's a woman helming it, I think, is very important, and that the men are all supporting her is, you know, like a really positive thing as well. And the story is largely about consent as well, because there's the fact that, well, they want to draw her breath and, you know, draw power from her, but, you know, they're worried about, you know, oh, we're 200 years old and she's 20. That feels like there's some sort of ethical line here that, you know, we can't quite cross. Then there's the fact that Lindsay herself, the protagonist, has the power to command vampires to do whatever she wants. Like, she can just speak and they'll do it, because she's descended from a master, from someone known as the Great Vampire King, who, by the way, is not Dracula.
Okay, cool.
But she has the power to compel vampires to do whatever she says. And when she realizes that she can't exactly be friends with someone who she commands, she decides to not give them orders. Even though sometimes giving them orders would be the convenient thing to do, she decides, no, they need to, you know, do things with me of their own free will. And that's, you know, how we act as equals. And so that theme of consent is probably the largest theme of the story throughout. And really turning that on its head and, you know, giving, there is a bit of, you know, a gender dynamic in there, I think, but it's a very subtle one. But I really dig it so far.
Well, in a world where consent is still a message we apparently have to give out, where we can't just take it for granted, I think it's great to have a story that uses a narrative to push that rather than just ask for consent.
Yeah. I also really want to push that this is a PG story as well. Deliberately writing it so that someone of any age could read this. You know, like, it still has, you know, those queer elements in it, but it's still, you know, friendly for, you know, maybe like teenagers to read as well. And it's also opened me up to a new kind of humor writing as well. Being able to write jokes, like in the sense that, you know, like I felt like I was 10 years old again, and, you know, making up knock knock jokes is sort of, you know, how I mentally felt as I was writing this, realizing, oh, I can be funny and not have to talk about sex or, you know, things that are, you know, horrible or brutal. I can just write silly humor with this, which is another thing that I'm really, really proud of.
You're fun.
If you check out the first chapter, you'll actually get an example of what I'm talking about. There's a great, perhaps if obvious, practical joke from one of the main characters, but, you know, do check it out.
So you talked about Lindsay as being the lead vampire. Who makes up the rest of the Fang Force? Straight white men?
They're definitely men. Mm-hmm. Not sure if they're straight, not sure if they're white. I actually leave that pretty ambiguous. I really like the idea of the audience, you know, building up these characters however they want them to be. But so far, we've been introduced to Cassius and Luther, one of whom is, you know, a very stoic, serious, straight-faced man who, you know, doesn't really make his feelings known, but he can smell everything because he has, you know, he borrows from, you know, the wolf. So he can more or less smell anything. And Luther, he draws from the power of the beetle, so he's a bit of a strong man. And, you know, he's a bit more showy and, you know, is worried about how fashionable he looks. Because he's also a man from the 1700s. So he's just like, am I fashionable? Are my frills in all the right places?
It sounds a bit like a Waititi.
They're one's a fop, one's a dandy. I really love that about them.
Love a dandy.
Yeah.
No. So, is this in a shared universe with Glimmer Girl, or is it a separate universe?
Everything I write is in a shared universe, unless explicitly stated otherwise. In fact, I even have a crossover you'll probably be seeing about middle of next year of Fang Force and Glimmer Girl, where they meet up and, you know, having great moments of, like, Glimmer Girl going, like, I'm in a giant robot. How did that happen? Who has a giant robot?
Me. No.
You wish.
Yeah, I do, really do wish. Can you give us sort of any spoilers or previews for what's coming up? Or,
well, we do have Luther and Cassius being introduced in the second chapter, but there will be an additional two members joining the team, Vincent and Drake. They'll be coming along soon. I really like the fact that I have a male pink ranger as well. And even though, like, he might seem a bit, you know, stereotypical, you know, in the sense that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, having a feminine pink male ranger. In the sense of it, I didn't make him, like, a catty bitch, like you could do with a femme guy. Like, he's actually kind of a sweetheart, and he just sort of quietly assesses things. So I really wanted to have a more positive feminine man than we, you know, usually would in pop culture. Plus, they have giant robots, as you heard, which are actually their animal familiars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so keeping with the vampire theme there.
Familiar.
Familiar.
Can you give us a clue about one familiar?
Which familiar?
Well, Lindsay's familiar?
Oh, she is the bat.
Yeah, oh, okay. Oh, right, okay.
So there's going to be the bat, the wolf, the spider, the beetle, and the cougar.
You sure you don't want to give Lindsay that one?
She's 20.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, so where can we find these masterpieces?
Now, you can check out my work at mirandasparks.com, and that is my blog. You can check it out. It's free to access, but, you know, I also accept donations from people as well if you like my work enough.
And we also pop that up onto our Facebook, so you can go through that way if you wish.
Definitely.
And our Facebook is just Geeks Out, so.
Yeah, that's it. It's nice and easy.
Yeah, on Joy 94.9.
Yes.
Speaking of, you are listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9 if you hadn't picked that up. Coming up, I'm going to review Servant and Photograph 51.
Hi, I'm Corin Nemec, and you are listening to Geeks Out on Joy.
We would like to thank Miranda Sparks for popping into the studio and interviewing us and talking about her series.
She's just looking fabulous in the sequin dress.
And those gold high heels.
Oh, my gosh. I think it's the first time I've seen Miranda in high heels, actually. What a queen. You are listening to Geeks Out here.
Oh, she just fell into the elevator. Oh, no.
Oh, no. She fell down the elevator into some bullets.
Whoa, okay.
For those not here, we all looked over to the elevator.
You are listening to Geeks Out and Joy 94.9. I am actually the aforementioned Miranda Sparks here with Tam, and we've also got Clayton here.
Hi.
Who is going to be telling us about Apple TV Plus's Servant. What's Servant about, Clayton?
Well, Servant is, after the loss of her child, a mother softens her grief by acknowledging a doll as her child. Returning to work, she employs a nanny to care for the doll. As the new addition to the household settles in, the parents' world begins to take a dark turn.
Now, this series, you might have some ideas from it, like, you know, watching the trailer.
Mm.
Because we know that there's something. Well, you know, like, we obviously know that this is an unfortunate situation for the parents.
Definitely.
But there's also something really dark about the nanny as well.
Her name's not Fran, by the way. look, you definitely get this dark vibe from the nanny, who is played really well. Not quite sure how to take her, though, because she doesn't do a lot. Like, she kind of just looks ominous. And then looks ominous again.
So how many episodes have we seen? Like, is this just the first episode?
So Apple TV are employing a really weird model where they're releasing, like, a few episodes at a time. Like, so they've released 3 of 11, I think there's going to be. Mm-hmm. So they've also... Another weird thing about Apple TV is the way they do episode lengths, which I think most of the episodes have averaged about 37 minutes, which is a very unusual timing for a show.
Mm.
Which I do like about streaming is that you can actually have a show be whatever length you want. You're not confined by advertising and whatever other things. And over the years, channels like ABC have done a little bit of that messing around, but not quite as heavily as, you know, streaming is. So anyway, it's executive produced and the first episode is directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Does anyone know how to say the name? Because I can.
Shyamalan.
Shyamalan? Okay, cool. So he is down as the executive producer, but if you looked at all of the advertising that's gone in around this, you'd think that he was doing the whole thing. Cause
they've really stuck their name, his name, on all of this.
It's M. Night Shyamalan's Servant. And, like, okay, yep, he's not actually that involved, but hey. So
he's the producer, but he's not the writer, creator.
No, none of those things. Mm. I'm shaking my head and realize, oh, it's radio. none of those things. He directs the first episode, which you can very much tell his style through that. Very long shots and, you know, we just move through the room and it's all that sort of thing.
Hi.
Sorry, I got excited about seeing someone out the window.
It's like that at 8 p.m. when, like, you know, you're in the studio alone and it's like, someone's here.
There's people. So anyway, One thing that has me really excited is that it stars Lauren Ambrose, who you might know from 6 Feet Under, but also from Torchwood Miracle Day. And I love her. She was just amazing in 6 Feet Under. And then her crazy character in Torchwood just topped the cake. And this is another out there character. So she's a little left to center, which is, you know, I really like in a character. And she's just such a great presence, beautiful red hair flowing, and it's just absolutely, I love seeing her on screen. And her acting is always a lot of fun. So
now, one of the things we talked about in the news last week was that this series has already been greenlit for a second season.
Yeah.
Even before the release of the first episode, which I think came out on November 29?
Yeah, it wasn't long ago. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I found really odd because, it, you know, looking at it so far, I'm kind of undecided if I even like it, which is kind of a weird way to kind of say, oh, yeah, everyone's going to love it. Let's just do another season.
How would you describe the pacing of the show?
It's could go a little bit faster, but it's not horrible. I think there's a lot of stuff out there that's paced a lot worse than this. It's keeps moving, but then it probably lingers on a few things longer than it needs to, particularly the first episode, which is the M. Night Shyamalan episode. It does linger a little
bit. So it's his trademark lingering, trying to be spooky bits, bending a little too long there.
Yeah, and there's just that hint of a surprise, what do we call that? Twist ending. That
what's a twist?
Yeah, we feel that the sprinkling of a twist as we go. I am going to say that if you want to see it, it's probably worth checking out. It also stars Toby Kebbell, who he represents how the audience is feeling. Like, he has his disdain for the doll is quite apparent, and that's kind of like, what's up with this doll thing? Like, and he kind of just picks it up and whacks its head around, doesn't care. And
so this is the father figure?
This is the father figure.
Yeah.
And he was from A Monster Calls was the only main thing that I've seen him in. So, yeah. But also, really interesting, you have Rupert Grint, also known as Ron Weasley.
Yeah.
So he's getting around, looking a bit different to how he did a few years ago.
He's an adult now.
He is an adult, which is quite weird, and I don't like it. No, he's fine. He's good. he is the brother of the mother character. So, and it's his first American role, which is quite interesting. I would have thought he had done other American things, but no.
So he's actually speaking with an American accent.
He is speaking with an American accent.
That I can't imagine that.
It's not. It's weird. It's my brain's not coping. But you know, he's quite fun, has a good presence, and I'm down for it being in this. So
I just want to say, just off tangent, real quick. Rupert Grint, when as a child asked what he would do with all this Harry Potter money, said he would buy an ice cream truck, and then as an adult, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah,
and that's he actually nice. Drives around and gives out ice cream. Doesn't even sell it. Just gives it out.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Haha. Did another pun. Didn't mean to. At this stage, I'm not really sure whether what I would give it. Like, I'd probably say a 6, maybe.
Dead 6 gold? With a question mark?
Yeah. 6 lifeless dolls. Yeah. The doll's not dead as such.
Is this going in directions that you would otherwise imagine a show like this would go?
I think it is kind of staying to form. Like, it's sticking with the premises that you would expect this sort of series to have. There's not a whole lot of new stuff happening here. And we know that, I'm going to say that M. Night Shyamalan was a bit of a one-hit wonder. He's had other stuff that's okay, but really, like, he had that first film, Sixth Sense, which was amazing. And then everything else then I found meh. So
I still think Unbreakable was pretty good.
I hated Unbreakable.
Yeah.
But I may be the only one, so that's sorry. Okay.
I thought
Tamsin
it was,
does not approve.
It was audible.
I thought it was interesting for what it was, but yeah, he has kind of gone downhill since then.
Yeah. And he got a bit, there's big issues with his choice of people to play certain roles in certain Dragon Ball.
Are you talking about the Avatar The Last Airbender movie that canonically does not exist in any universe, and I don't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, and it's super whitewashed. which is really interesting, as he is a director of color, that he whitewashed his movie. So it's a strange... and then got a bit transphobic in some of his more recent
Split,
things.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
So, 6 question marks.
6 question marks. That's a really good way to word it.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear what other people have to think. If you want to head Joy... on air at joy.org.au or 0427JOY949. We've still got time. If you've watched it, let us know what you think.
Now, Clayton, you've also got something. You went to a play.
Yes. Recently.
So it's like a movie, except the actors are actually there on a stage in front of you.
Exactly. And now, it's live.
Now, the play is called, I believe, Photograph 51.
Exactly.
All right. What is this about? Because I'm getting nothing from that title so far.
Well, then what you do get from that is like, is this about Area 51? That's pretty much your only takeaway. But it's actually the story of Rosalind Franklin, who was a scientist whose photography was instrumental in the discovery of the design of DNA. So she actually worked in amazing photography stuff that was able to see far smaller than we'd ever seen before and was taking photos of DNA, which is quite incredible.
So this is a real-life person, a real-life story, based on actual facts and probably closer to actual real life than most films that claim to be based on a real story as well.
I don't know all the details to say, yeah, it's definitely like real life and stuff. But it's, it was an interesting take because it actually demonstrated how horrible the life of female scientists have been over the years. Mm. And the fact that her work was stolen, made into DNA. I'm giving away bits of plot here, but it's like a historical thing. So, they're made into a DNA model, and then people won Nobel Prize after her death for her work. And it's all just very, she had such a horrible experience with men, basically. Mm. I found the play really interesting, but surprisingly, there's only one female character, and there are 5 men on stage, which makes sense when you think about stuff at the time.
I mean, it sounds thematically appropriate.
Yeah,
that should happen, and probably a very deliberate choice by the playwright and the casting crew.
Yeah. It represents the way women have been treated, ignored by men, but also had amazing staging. So the way they set up the stage was really impressive, and it's sort of done in this big circle, and just people coming in and out of this circle, which was quite interesting. I did not like the ending, though, because it put way too much emphasis on men. It sort of took away the fact that, her amazing life and went, oh, but this is how men felt about her. Mm. So it was, that kind of was disappointing.
Was this sort of like, congratulations to the men who eventually did appreciate her sort of thing?
No, it was just kind of like, I don't really want to give away the full ending, but it was just the way that a man felt about her, which wasn't necessary at all. So, yeah.
It definitely feels like, I just feel in my head, like one of my writing coaches being like, sure, don't tell. And, it's outright telling. It's like, well, this is what we should think of her. And having that mansplained to the audience, maybe.
Exactly. And it felt a little mansplainy, but yeah. Mm. All right. So I'd probably give this probably about 8.
Eight DNA strands.
Out of 10. I really enjoyed it, actually. One of the better plays I've seen this year.
Yeah, and I don't know, did you check that? Where's that on?
Oh, it's on at the Art Centre in the Fairfax. So if you want to head to the Art Centre website, you'll be able to pick up tickets. And the good thing about the Fairfax is there's actually places you can get some really good price tickets. So
absolutely. Well, I don't know, definitely check out some more live stuff because, it sounds super fun.
I do love my live stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're coming up on Geeks Out. We're going to have a quick one or two facts about Buffy from Tamsin, which she didn't know about, and enjoying the panic on her face.
We did have to miss a couple.
After we played the track, though.
After?
Yeah.
They don't give me any airtime tonight.
I'm sorry.
In the corner with you.
You're on Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Rick from Happy Tin.
The Joy community. Here for you. Here together.
Welcome back to Geeks Out, folks.
Yay.
We're in our last 5 minutes of the show, and Tamsin is going to drop some Buffy knowledge on us before we leave you tonight. Tamsin, what do folks need to know about Buffy that they didn't before?
So I'll lead with Miranda's because I love this one too. There were 43 churches in the town of Sunnydale. And, they said that the theory is there's something to do with Hellmouth.
I mean, yeah.
You kind of need a bit of protection.
I mean, presumably where the devil is a-hanging, then you need a lot of churching.
If nothing else, just somewhere to hide.
The other fun bit, Ryan Reynolds originally was offered the role of Xander, but he passed it up because of his own awful high school experiences.
That's fair enough. I suppose if you've had an awful time in high school, you don't want to be playing it on TV.
Was it before or after Two Guys, a Girl, and Pizza Place?
It was probably around the same time.
Yeah, he chose it instead, yeah. Mm.
And instead, he chose Green Lantern.
Oh, well, let's not talk about that.
The show was one of the first to feature the words, Google it, in an episode, which Willow does so, which mm-hmm. I was really chuffed when I started watching that.
About that.
And of course, in 2003, it was the show that featured the first lesbian sex scene that was broadcast in TV history. Bum, bum, bum.
I wonder what the first lesbian kiss was, because I've been rewatching.
I know this.
Oh, what was it?
It was actually Star Trek, I think.
Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
Yes, because I was about to mention that. It was between Dax and one of her former lovers.
Yeah, so that was the first syndicated or major kiss, female kiss.
Yes, and there have been other all-female kisses on Star Trek Deep Space Nine as well. I have learned binging the entire series.
Awesome.
Was that just you kissing the screen?
I mean, you know...
Maybe.
I mean, come on, Major Kira, come on.
And Dax.
And our favourite all-time stat about Buffy is, believe it or not, although she was not credited by name, one of the executive producers was Dolly Parton.
I can't words.
Look, I have no idea how we didn't know this.
I know, it's quite... So she had a producer partnership called Sand Dollar Entertainment with Sandy Gillian, who managed Dolly Parton's career. So... Mic dropped. Buffy is the bomb.
I feel like that's one of those, like, you know, finding out that Lucille Ball was one of the drivers behind Star Trek kind of facts. But, you know, that you have these, you know, incredible women who are working behind the scenes to really push genre content out there. And that, honestly, you know, gets me really excited and, you know, makes me want to, you know, scream at the rooftops. And, like, you know, see, women are part of the fandom.
All right, now I want to get this song out because I want to play as much of it as we can. So thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Clayton, Miranda and Tamsin. Thank you to you both. This is from Once More With Feeling. I can't remember the name of the song.
Going Through the Motions.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Every single night, the same arrangement, I go out and fight the fight. Still I always feel the strangest strangement, nothing here is real, nothing here is right. I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows that I've been going through the motions, walking through the part. Nothing seems to penetrate my heart. I was always brave and kind of righteous. Now I find I'm wavering. Crawl out of your grave. You find this fight just doesn't mean a thing.
She ain't got that swing.
Thanks for noticing.
She does pretty well with fiends from hell. But lately we can tell that she's just going through the motions. Somehow. She's not even half the girl she... Oh...
Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor.
How can I repay?
Whatever, I don't wanna be.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.